Remember how you used to fight over whose was darker?
Oh, but you had the prettiest hair. Aunt Alma turned to me. Your mama had the prettiest hair you ever saw. Soft? Why, it would make Reese's feel like steel wire. It was the softest hair in Greenville County. And gold as sunlight on sheets. It didn't go dark till she had you girls, a little bit with you, and all dark with Reese. Hair will do that, you know, darken in pregnancy. Ain't nothing that will stop once it starts. Mama laughed. Remember when Carr first got pregnant and swore she'd shave her head if it looked like it was gonna go dark? Aunt Alma nodded, her dark brown pin curls bobbing. Rinsed it in piss, she did, every Sunday evening. Tommy Lee's baby piss that she begged off Ruth. All 'cause Granny swore baby piss rinses would keep her blonde. Didn't she stink? I bit at the rubber tip of a hairpin, peeling the coating off the metal so I could taste the sweet iron tang underneath. Baby piss don't stink, Aunt Alma told me. Unless the baby's sick. And Tommy Lee wasn't never sick a day in his life. Carr didn't smell no different than she ever did, but her hair went dark anyway. It's the price of babies. Oh, it ain't that. Mama pulled me up onto her lap and started the arduous process of brushing out my hair. All us Boatwrights go dark as we get older. It's just the way it goes. Blonde goes red or brown, and darker and darker. Ain't none of us stays a blonde once we're grown. Except you, honey, Aunt Alma grinned. Yeah, but I got Clairol, don't I? Mama laughed and hugged me. What you think, Alma? Should I cut this mop or not? She can't keep it neat to save her life. Hates me pulling on it when I try to brush it out. Hell yes, cut it. I'll get the bowl. We'll trim it right down to her neck. No, I howled, and wrapped my hands around my head. I want my hair. I want my hair. But you won't let us do nothing with it, honey. No, 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 it's my hair, and I want it. I want it long and tangled and just the way it is. Aunt Alma reached over and took the hairpin out of my mouth. Lord, look at her, she said, stubborn as the day is long. Uh-huh. Mama put both hands on my shoulders and squeezed. She didn't sound angry. I raised my head to look at her. Her brown eyes were enormous close up, with little flecks of light in the pupils. I could almost see myself between the flashes of gold. Well, what you expect, huh? I looked back at Aunt Alma. Her eyes were the same warm brown, deep and shining with the same gold lights. And I realized suddenly that she had the same cheekbones as Mama, the same mouth. She's just like you. My mouth wasn't like that, or my face either. Worse, my black eyes had no gold. I didn't look like anybody at all. You mean, said Mama. She and Aunt Alma nodded together above me, grinning at each other in complete agreement. I loosened my hands from around my skull slowly, letting Mama start brushing out my hair. Reese put her pudgy little fingers in her mouth and stared at me solemnly.
Bone,
she stammered.
Yes, Aunt Alma agreed, hefting Reese up in her arms. Our stubborn bone is just like her mama, Reese Cup, just like her aunt's, just like a boat ride, and just like you.
But I don't look like nobody, I wailed. Aunt Alma laughed.
Why, you look like our bone, girl.
I don't look like Mama. I don't look like you. I don't look like nobody.
You look like me, Mama said. You look like my own baby girl.
She put her fingers delicately on my cheeks, pressing under my eyes.
You got the look, all right. I can see it. See what it's gonna be like when you grow bigger. These bones here.
Her fingers slipped smoothly down over my mouth and chin.
And here. You gonna look like our granddaddy for sure. Those Cherokee cheekbones, huh, Alma?
Oh, yes, for sure. She's gonna be another one. Another beauty to worry about. I smiled wide. Not really believing them, but wanting to. I held still then, trying not to flinch as Mama began to brush relentlessly at my knotted hair. If I got a permanent, I would lose those hours on Mama's lap, sitting in the curve of her arm while she brushed and brushed and smoothed my hair and talked soft above me. She always seemed to smell of buttery flour, salt, and fingernail polish, a delicate, insinuating aroma of the familiar and the astringent. I would breathe deep and bite my lips to keep from moaning while my scalp ached and burned. I would have cut off my head before I let them cut my hair and lost the unspeakable pleasure of being drawn up onto Mama's lap every evening. "Do I look like my daddy?" I asked. There was silence. Mama brushed steadily while Aunt Alma finished pulling the rags from Reese's hair. "Do I? Like my daddy, Mama?" Mama gathered all my hair up in one hand and picked at the ends with the side of the brush. "Alma, get me some of that sweet oil, honey, just a little for my palm. That's enough." The brush started again in long, sweeping strokes. Aunt Alma started to hum. I dropped my head. It wasn't even that I was so insistent on knowing anything about my missing father. I wouldn't have minded a lie. I just wanted the story Mama would have told. What was the thing she wouldn't tell me? The first thing. The place where she had made herself different from all her brothers and sisters and shut her mouth on her life. Mama brushed so hard she pulled my head all the way back. "You just don't know how to sit still, Bone." "No, Mama." I closed my eyes and let her move my head. Let her pull and jerk my hair until she relaxed a little. Aunt Alma was humming softly. The smell of sweet oil on Mama's fingers hung in the air. Reese's sing-song joined Aunt Alma's hum. I opened my eyes and looked into Mama's. You could see Reese's baby smile in those eyes. In the pupils, gold flecks gleamed and glittered, like pieces of something bright, reflecting light. Chapter 3. Love, at least love for a man not already part of the family, was something I was a little unsure about. Aunt Alma said love had more to do with how pretty a body was than anyone would ever admit. And Glenn was pretty enough, she swore, with his wide shoulders and long arms, his hair combed back, and his collar buttoned up tight over his skinny neck. Sometimes after Glenn had been over to visit and gone, Mama would sit on the porch and smoke a cigarette, looking off into the distance. Sometimes I'd go slide quietly under her armpit and sit with her, saying nothing. I would wonder what she was thinking, but I didn't ask. If I had, she'd have said something about the road or the trees or the stars. She'd have talked about work or something one of my cousins had done or one of the uncles, or she'd have swatted my butt and sent me off to bed, then gone back to sitting there with her face so serious, smoking her Pall Mall cigarette right down to the filter. "You and Reese like Glenn, don't you?" Mama would say now and then in a worried voice. I would nod every time. "Of course we liked him," I'd tell her, and watch her face relax so her smile came back. "I do, too. He's a good man." She'd run her hands over her thighs slow, hug her knees up close to her breasts, and nod to herself more than me. "He's a good man." The nights Mama worked at the diner, she'd leave us with Aunt Ruth or Aunt Alma, but sometimes, if she wasn't working too late, she would make up a bed of blankets and pillows in the back seat of her Pontiac and take us with her. She'd feed us dinner in a booth near the kitchen and let us listen to the jukebox for a while before she put us to bed in the car, telling me sternly not to unlock the door for anyone but her. While we sat in that booth, I'd watch her at work. She was mesmerizing. Young and sweet-faced and too pretty for anyone to be mean to her. The truckers teased her and played her favorite songs on the jukebox. The younger ones would try to get her to go out with them, but she'd joke them out of it. The older ones who knew her well would compliment her on us, her pretty girls. I watched it all, admiring the men with their muscular forearms and broad shoulders as they sipped the coffee my mama served them, absorbing the music as it played continuously, keeping Reese from spilling her milk or sliding down under the table, and smiling at Mama when she looked over to me.
You're Annie's girl, ain't you?
One of them said to me.
Your little sister looks just like her, don't she? You must look like your daddy.
I nodded carefully. When Glenn Waddell came, Mama would get him a beer and sit with him when she could. Sometimes, if she was busy, he would carry us out to her car when Reese got sleepy, holding us in his big, strong arms with the same studied gentleness as when he touched Mama. I always wanted to wait till Mama could tuck us into our bed of blankets, but she seemed to like for Glenn to carry us out with all the truckers watching. I'd see her look over as he went out with us, see her face soften and shine. Maybe that was love, that look. I couldn't tell. Mama dated Glenn Waddell for 2 years. People said it took her time to trust men again after Lyle Parsons died. Mama would occasionally take Reese and me with her to pick Glenn up from his new job at the RC Cola plant. Sometimes he would still be working, lifting flats of soda bottles to stock his truck for the next morning's route. All those full cases had to be loaded and the empties pulled off and transferred to the conveyor belt for cleaning and shipment to the bottling plant. He would shift each case of 24 bottles above his head and onto the truck with a grunt, swinging from his hips with his whole weight, arms extended, and mouth sucked in against his tongue with concentration. His collar was open, his pale blue short-sleeved uniform shirt was limp, and it stuck to his back in a dark stripe down his spine. Mama would still be in her waitress dress, smelling of salt and fried food, and just as sweaty and tired as he was, but Glenn would smile at her like he knew she sweat sugar and cream. Mama would lean out the window of the car and call his name softly, and he would blush dark red and start moving a little faster, either to show off his strength or to get out of there sooner. We weren't sure. Glenn was a small man, but so muscular and strong that it was hard to see the delicacy in him, though he was strangely graceful in his rough work clothes and heavy boots. There were bottle fragments on the pavement, crushed shards ground into the tarmac, and all the men wore heavy work boots with thick rubber soles. Glenn Waddell's feet were so fine that his boots had to be bought in the boys' department of the Sears Roebuck, while his gloves could only be found in the tall men's specialty stores. He would pivot on those boy-sized feet, turning his narrow hips and grunting with his load, everything straining and forceful, while his hands cradled cases and flats as delicately as if they were soft-shelled eggs. His palms spread so wide he could easily span half a case's width, keeping every bottle level no matter how high he had to throw the flat. People talked about Glenn's temper and his hands. He didn't drink, didn't mess around, didn't even talk dirty. But the air around him seemed to hum with vibration, and his hands were enormous. They hung like baseball mitts at the end of his short, tight-muscled arms. On his slender, small-boned frame, they were startling, incongruous, constantly in motion, and the only evidence of just how strong he was. When he reached for Reese and me, he would cup his palms around the back of our heads and drop down to look into our faces, his warm, damp fingers tangling gently in our hair. He was infinitely careful with us, gentle and slow with those hands, but he was always reaching for Mama with sudden, wide sweeps of his arms. When he hugged her, he would lay his hands on her back so that he covered it from neck to waist, pulling her as tight to him as he could. Mama was always taking Glenn's hands between hers, her fingers making his seem even bigger, harder, and longer. "He's a gentle man," she told her sisters. "You should see how tender he gets, the way he picks Reese up when she falls asleep in the back of the car. Like she was so delicate, so fine, like that glass that chimes when you click it against your teeth." My aunts would nod, but not with much conviction. But I could tell that Mama had begun to love Glenn. I saw how she blushed when he looked at her or touched her, even in passing. A flush would appear on her neck, and her cheeks would brighten until her whole face glowed pink and hot. Glenn Waddell turned Mama from a harried, worried mother into a giggling, hopeful girl. One afternoon, Glenn dropped the last case onto the truck and turned to look at Mama, Reese, and me waiting in Mama's old Pontiac. The sun caught his sweat, shiny beads and rivulets, so that he seemed to glitter in the light. He wiped his face, but the sweat kept coming down in tracks, and he looked as if he were weeping. He walked toward us slowly, dropped by the door in a crouch, and reached through the window to take Mama into a tight embrace.
"Oh, Annie,"
he whispered.
"Annie, Annie."
His voice was a husky tremolo.
You know I love you so. I can't wait no more, Annie. I can't. I love you with all my heart, girl."
His arms stretched over the seat and pulled Reese and me forward, pressing us into Mama's neck and back.
"And your girls, Annie. Oh, God, I love them. Our girls, Annie, our girls."
He sobbed then, pulling us in tighter so that Reese's bird bones crunched into my shoulder, and the haze of his sweat drifted all around us. His face slid past Mama's hair, pressed into mine, his mouth and teeth touched my cheek.
"Call me Daddy," he whispered. "Call me Daddy, 'cause I love your Mama. 'Cause I love you. I'm gonna treat you right. You'll see. You're mine. All of you mine."
His shoulders shook. His body reaching through the window seemed to rock the whole car.
"Oh, Annie,"
he shuddered.
"Don't say no, please, Annie. Don't do that to me."
"Glenn," Mama breathed. "Oh, Glenn, I don't know." She trembled and slowly stretched her own arms up and around his shoulders.
"Oh, God. All right, I'll think about it. All right, honey, all right."
Glenn jumped back. He slammed his hands down on the car top once, twice, three times. The echoes were like shots. Mama was crying quietly, her shoulders heaving back against Reese and me.
"God damn," he screamed. "God damn, Annie."
He spun in a circle, whooping.
"I knew you'd say yes. Oh, what I'm gonna do, Annie, I promise you. You ain't never even imagined."
He spread his arms wide and whooped again. His face looked like someone was shining a hot pink light on it. He pulled the door open and reached for Mama, his hands still shaking as they wrapped around her back. He drew her in so close that she came off her feet, and then he swung her around in the air, laughing and shouting. Reese put her hands on my shoulders and held on. I could feel the vibration as she shook gently to the echo of Glenn's shouts. We both smiled and held on to each other while Glenn danced Mama around the parking lot in the shelter of his arms.
"You just don't like the Waddells," Mama told Granny.
She was standing on Aunt Alma's porch, wearing a blue and white polka dot blouse Glenn had bought her. It showed off the color of her eyes, he'd said. From the look on her face, anyone could see that she was making an effort to be patient with Granny.
"Glenn loves me. Loves my girls. Don't matter if his family is stuck up and full of themselves.
Glenn's not like that."
"You don't know what that boy is like, Annie. You just don't know."
"I know he loves me."
Mama spoke with conviction, certain that Glenn Waddell loved her more than his soul and everything else would come from that.
"I know enough," she told Granny.
"That boy's got something wrong with him."
Granny turned to Aunt Alma for support.
"He's always looking at me out the sides of his eyes, like some old junkyard dog waiting to steal a bone. And you know Annie's the bone he wants."
"You just don't think anybody's good enough for Annie," Alma teased. "You want her to go on paying you to keep her girls every day till she's dried up and can't imagine marrying again."
It was a continuation of a fight that had been dragging on all week. Now it was Sunday, and Glenn was coming over to take everyone out to the lake for a picnic. Granny was refusing to come along, even though Mama had packed chicken hash and jello with her in mind.
"Let it go, Annie, and help me with this camera."
Aunt Alma had a new brownie and was determined to document every family occasion she could.
"You can't win a fight with Mama, no way. Just leave her alone and let her come to her senses in her own good time."
When Glenn arrived, it was the camera that coaxed Granny out of the house and onto the porch with the rest of us. But then, it was Glenn who didn't want his picture taken.
"I ain't no movie star," he told Alma,
and kept putting his hand up in front of his face when she pointed her camera at him.
"It's that new haircut," Earl joked. "Glenn don't want people to know his ears stick out that far." "I'm with you, Glenn. We're too ugly for photographs. Let the women and kids line up for 'em and leave us alone."
Uncle Earl liked Glenn Waddell well enough, but like Granny,
He didn't think much of the Waddell family. He even said so to Glenn's face, but the boy had just grinned at him, and that didn't seem right. Even if he didn't get on with his people, Earl believed that Glenn shouldn't let anybody badmouth them. If they had traded a few punches over it, bled on each other a little and made up after, the whole thing would have felt better to Earl all around. But Glenn was a quiet sort who never fought in friendly style. He either gave you that slow grin or went all out and tried to kill you. The latter earned him a little respect, Earl admitted. The cops had had to be called on Glenn once at the foundry before he left to take the job at the RC Cola plant. Glenn was a grown man, a working man, and he loved Annie Boatwright. Everybody knew that, even Granny. "Now, Earl, don't you be making no trouble." Granny pushed her hair back behind her ears and smoothed down the wrinkles on her green print blouse. "I want Alma to get pictures of everybody. I want a book of family pictures for my cedar chest." Earl laughed and sneaked around to poke Alma while she was focusing on Granny and Mama, then chased Reese and me out into the yard, catching Reese and throwing her up in the air so high she flapped her arms like she was going to fly. I dodged them and cut through the bushes, ignoring the brambles that caught in the skirt of the new dress Mama had made me wear. From the other side of Earl's truck, I stood and looked back at them. Granny up on the porch with her hesitant, uncertain smile, and Mama down on the steps in her new blouse with Glenn in that short brush haircut, while Alma posed on the walkway focusing up at them. Everybody looked nervous, but determined. Mama stiff in Glenn's awkward embrace, and Glenn almost stumbling off the steps as he tried to turn his face away from the camera. It made my neck go tight just to look at them. Only Earl and Reese were relaxed. Reese shrieking and giggling, still up in Earl's arms, her legs outstretched as he spun the two of them around and around on the wet grass in the bright sunlight. "Bone! Bone!" Reese screamed. "Oh, Bone, help me! Help me!" "I'm gonna fly you to the stars, little girl," Uncle Earl teased through clenched teeth, making Reese scream all the louder. The words were barely out of his mouth when he slipped in the grass, coming down hard on his butt. His legs flew straight out in front of him, and Reese landed safely on his lap, her scream turning to a giggle as Earl started to curse. "God damn, I've ruined these britches now." "Serve you right if you did," Granny yelled at him. "You could have killed that child. Reese, you get your little dimple ass up here with your mama."
"You come on too, Bone," Mama called to me. "You and Reese come on up here for Alma to get a picture of the four of us together."
"Yeah, come on, girls."
Glenn held on to Mama with both hands around her waist.
"Smile now, everyone," called Alma as the shutter clicked.
Chapter 4. The spring Mama married Glenn Waddell, there were thunderstorms every afternoon and rolling clouds that hung around the foothills north and west to the Smokies. The moon came up with a ghostly halo almost every night, and there was a blue shimmer on the horizon at sunset.
"Ain't no time to be marrying," Granny announced, "or planting or building nothing."
"You sure now, Annie?"
Earl must have asked Mama twice before he drove her down to the courthouse in his pickup truck to meet Glenn and get the license.
It seemed he just couldn't take her ready smile for an answer, even though he agreed to be best man after Glenn's brother had refused the honor. He asked her one more time before he let her out of the truck.
"You're worse than Granny," Annie told him.
"Don't you want to see me settled down and happy?" He gave it up and kissed her out the door.
Granny wasn't surprised when she heard that great-grandma Shirley had turned down her invitation to the wedding dinner Aunt Alma organized. The Eustace aunts, Marvella and Maybell, the ones who insisted they could tell the future from their beans, also skipped the dinner, though Marvella was polite about it.
"I know he loves Annie,"
Marvella told Alma when she came by to collect flowers from their garden.
"And sometimes, love can change everything."
Maybell was not so generous.
"Yeah, Glenn loves Annie. He loves her like a gambler loves a fast racehorse or a desperate man loves whiskey. That kind of love eats a man up. I don't trust that boy. Don't want our Annie marrying him."
"But Annie loves Glenn,"
Alma told Maybelle impatiently.
That's the thing you ought to be thinking about. She needs him.
Needs him like a starving woman needs meat between her teeth, and I ain't gonna let nobody take this away from her.
Come on, Maybelle. You know there ain't no way to say what's gonna happen between a man and a woman.
That ain't our business anyway. That's theirs. Alma took Maybelle's hands between her own.
We just got to stand behind our girl. Do everything we can to make sure she don't get hurt again.
Oh, Lord. Maybelle shook her head. I don't want to fight you, Alma. Maybe you're right. I know how lonely Annie's been, I know.
She pulled her hands free, tucked some loose gray hairs up in the bun at the back of her neck, and turned to her sister.
We got to think about this, Marvella. We got to think hard about our girl.
They did what they could. The sisters sent Mama a wedding present, a love knot Marvella had made using some of her own hair, after Maybelle had cut little notches in their rabbit's ears under a new moon, adding the blood to the knot. She set the rabbits loose, and then the two of them tore up half a dozen rows of their beans and buried honeycomb in a piece of lace tablecloth where the beans had flourished. The note with the love knot told Mama that she should keep it under the mattress of the new bed Glenn had bought, but Mama sniffed the blood and dried hair and shook her head over the thing. She couldn't quite bring herself to throw it away, but she put it in one of her flower pots out in the utility room where Glenn wouldn't find it stinking up their house.
Reese and I hated the honeymoon. We both thought we would get to go. For weeks before the wedding, Mama kept telling us that this was a marriage of all of us, that we were taking Glenn as our daddy at the same time she was taking him as a husband. She and Alma had even sewed us up little lace veils to wear as we walked ahead of her at the wedding, Reese carrying flowers while I carried the rings. But Mama and Glenn left halfway through Aunt Alma's dinner, with only one quick kiss goodbye.
Why don't we get to go?
Reese kept demanding while everybody laughed at her. I got so mad, I hid in Alma's sewing room and cried myself to sleep in her rocker. When I woke up, I was on her daybed with a quilt across me and the house quiet. I got Alma's picture album out and climbed into the rocker. The new pictures from the picnic were at the back. There were half a dozen snapshots of Reese and me, alone, together, and with Granny or Earl. There was only one good one of Glenn and Mama, only one in which you could see her smile and his eyes. In most of them, Mama's head was bent so that only her chin showed, or Glenn's face was turned away so that you only saw the pale line of his neck and ear under his new haircut. Because of that, perhaps, the good picture was even more startling. Everything in that picture was clear, sharp, in focus. The contrast so strong you could trace the lines where sunlight sheared off and shade began. There was a blush on Mama's cheek, like the shadow of a bird. Polka dots on her seersucker blouse, a raised nap on her dark calf-length skirt, and a fine part in her brushed-back blonde hair. Mama was beautiful in it, no question, though there was a puffiness under her eyes and a tightness in the muscles of her neck that made her chin stick out. But her smile was full, her eyes clear, and you could see right into her. See how gentle she was in the way her neck angled as she looked past Glenn to Reese and me. The way her hands lay open on her lap, the fingers slightly bent as if they were ready to catch the sunlight. Beside Mama, Glenn was half in shadow with his head turned to the side, but the light shone on his smile, his cheek, his strong hands and slender frame. The smile was determined, tight, forceful, the eyes brilliant in the camera lens, gleaming in the sun's glare, the shoulders tense and hunched forward a little. One arm extended to hold Mama close, reaching around her from where he sat to her left. You could not tell a thing about Glenn from that picture, except that he was a good-looking man, strong and happy to be holding his woman. Mama's eyes were soft with old hurt and new hope. Glenn's eyes told nothing. The man's image was as flat and empty as a sheet of tin in the sun, throwing back heat and light, but no details. Not one clear line of who he really was behind those eyes. I tried to imagine what it would be like to live with him once the honeymoon was past. I looked at the picture again and remembered the day of the picnic. The way he kept pulling Mama back against him, his hands cupped over her belly possessively. I had heard Alma tease Mama the day before the wedding that she better hurry up and get married before she started showing. Mama had gotten all upset, demanded to know how Alma found out she was pregnant. I wondered if she had told Glenn yet.
Come on, girls!
Glenn's voice when he called Reese and me for the picture had a loud, impatient note I had never heard before. I'd come back around Earl's truck at a walk and looked into his face carefully. Yes, he knew. He was so pleased with himself, he looked swollen with satisfaction under that terrible haircut. Mama had said he wanted her to have his son, and it looked to me like he was sure he had it on the way. I sat in that rocker with those pictures until morning woke the house, and Aunt Alma came to check on me. I ran my fingers over Reese's baby smile on one, traced Earl's dark hair on another, examined just how far Granny's chin pushed out under her lower lip, and looked back to my own face in each to see how the camera had seen me. My eyes like Mama's eyes, darker, but open as hers, my smile fiercer and wider than Reese's, and my body in motion across Alma's yard, like an animal leaping into the air. Glenn was like a boy about the baby, grinning and boasting and putting his palms flat on Mama's stomach every chance he could to feel his son kick. His son. He never even entertained the notion Mama might deliver a girl. No, this would be his boy, Glenn was sure. He bought a crib and a new layette set on time payments, put them in their bedroom, and filled the crib with toys a baby boy would love. My boy's gonna look like the best of me and Annie, he told everyone insistently, as if by saying it often enough he could make it so. He even went out to Aunt Maybelle and Aunt Marvella's house with a gift of sweet corn for the rabbits, just so he could look into their eyes when he said, a boy, and hear them say it back to him when they took the corn. They said it was a boy, he told Earl later over pinto beans and cornbread at Aunt Ruth's house, the first evidence he'd ever given that he believed in the Eustace aunt's claim to women's magic. He was bursting with pride. Well, goddamn, Glenn. Congratulations. Earl kept his face carefully neutral. Never come between a man and his ambitions, he told Uncle Beau after Glenn had gone. Glenn ever gets the notion that anybody messed up his chance of getting a boy child out of Annie, and he's gonna go plumb crazy. A man should never put his ambition in a woman's belly. Beau didn't like Glenn much at all. Couldn't, he admitted, since he never trusted a man who didn't drink. And Glenn was as close to a teeter-tailer as the family had ever seen. Beau spit out the side of his mouth. Serve him right, if she gave him another girl. Uncle Neville harumphed, pouring them each a short glass of his home stock. Neville never wasted words when he could grunt, or a grunt when he could move his hands. He was supposed to be the quietest man in Greenville County, and his wife, Faye, was said to be the fattest woman. The two of them are more like furniture than anything, Granny had once said, just taking up space and shedding dust like a chiffon robe or a couch. Neville and Faye had heard her, and in their quiet way, refused to be in the same room with her ever again. It complicated family gatherings, but not too much. As Aunt Alma told everybody, Neville wasn't any great loss to conversation anyway. It was a surprise, then, when Neville sipped his whiskey, lifted his head, and spoke so clearly he could be heard out on the porch. Me, I'm hoping Annie does give him a son. Half a dozen sons while she's at it. That Glenn's got something about him. I almost like him. But the boy could turn like whiskey in a bad barrel. And I'm hoping he don't. Annie's had enough trouble in her life. He sipped again and shut his mouth back to its usual flat line. Earl and Beau stared at him, unsure whether to laugh or curse, but finally they dropped their glances into their cups. It was true enough, they both agreed. Annie deserved an end to trouble in her life. The night Mama went into labor, Glenn packed the Pontiac with blankets and cokes for Reese and me and parked out in the hospital lot to wait. He'd been warned it was going to take a while for the baby to come, and when he couldn't stand pacing the halls anymore, he came down to smoke cigarettes and listen to music on the car radio while Reese and I napped in the back seat. At some point well before dawn,
when it was still dark and cold. He reached across the seat to tug my shoulder and pulled me up front with him. He gave me some Coke and half a baby Ruth and told me he'd been in to check a little earlier and Mama was doing fine. Fine, I blinked at him and nodded, unsure what I was supposed to do or say. He smoked fiercely, exhaling out the top of the window where he'd opened it just a few inches, and talking to me like I was a grown-up.
I know she's worried, he said. She thinks if it's a girl, I won't love it. But it will be our baby, and if it's a girl, we can make another soon enough. I'll have my son. Annie and I will have our boy, I know it. I know.
He talked on, whispering quietly, sometimes so softly I could not understand him. I pulled my blanket around me and watched the sprinkling of stars visible just over the tall fir trees at the edge of the lot. The song playing low on the radio was a Kitty Wells tune that Mama liked. I rocked my head to the music and watched the night. I was thinking about the baby Mama was having, wondering what it might be like, if maybe it wouldn't be a girl. What were they going to name it? Glenn Jr., if it was a boy? They had never said. Mama thought it was unlucky to choose a name for a baby till it was born. Glenn put his hand on my neck, and the stars seemed to wink at me. I wasn't used to him touching me, so I hugged my blanket and held still. He slid out from behind the steering wheel a little and pulled me up on his lap. He started humming to the music, shifting me a little on his thighs. I turned my face up to look into his eyes. There were only a few lights on in the parking lot, but the red and yellow dials on the radio shone on his face. He smiled, and for the first time, I saw the smile in his eyes as plain as the one on his mouth. He pushed my skirt to the side and slid his left hand down between my legs, up against my cotton panties. He began to rock me then, between his stomach and his wrist, his fingers fumbling at his breeches. It made me afraid, his big hand between my legs and his eyes glittering in the dim light. He started talking again, telling me Mama was going to be all right, that he loved me, that we were all going to be so happy. Happy. His hand was hard, the ridge of his wrist bone pushing in and hurting me. I looked straight ahead through the windshield, too afraid to cry or shake or wiggle, too afraid to move at all. He kept saying, "It's gonna be all right." He kept rocking me, breathing through his mouth and staring straight ahead. I could see his reflection in the windshield. Dawn began to filter through the trees, making everything bright and cold. His hand dug in further. He was holding himself in his fingers. I knew what it was under his hand. I'd seen my cousins naked, laughing, shaking their things and joking, but this was a mystery, scary and hard. His sweat running down his arms to my skin smelled strong and nasty. He grunted, squeezed my thighs between his arm and his legs. His chin pressed down on my head and his hips pushed up at the same time. He was hurting me, hurting me. I sobbed once, and he dropped back down and let go of me. I bit my lips and held still. He brought his hand up to wipe it on the blanket, and I could smell something strange and bitter on his fingers. I pulled away, and that made him laugh. He kept laughing as he scrubbed his fingers against the blanket. Then he lifted me slightly, turning me so he could look into my face. The light was gray and pearly, the air wet and marble cold, Glenn's face the only thing pink and warm in sight. He smiled at me again, but this time the smile was not in his eyes. His eyes had gone dark and empty again, and my inside started to shake with fear. He wrapped the blanket around me tight and put me back with Reese in the nest of blankets and pillows he'd built up so many hours ago. I hunched my shoulders against the seat and watched Glenn's head in the gray light, his short hairs bristly and stiff. He lit another cigarette and started humming again. He looked back once, and I quickly closed my eyes, then was too afraid to open them again. His hum went on in time to the soft radio music, and the smell of Pall Malls began to soothe me.
I didn't know I was falling asleep until I woke up in the bright gray light of full morning. Glenn was gone. The car still and cold. There was an ache between my legs. But I wasn't afraid in the daylight. I sat up and looked out on gray clouds and dew-drenched fir branches. The asphalt looked wet and dark. There were a few nurses going in and out the emergency room doors, talking in low, mumbly tones. I breathed through my mouth and watched as more and more people drove into the lot, wondering if I had dreamed that whole early morning scene. I kept squeezing my thighs together, feeling the soreness, and trying to imagine how I could have bruised myself if it had been a dream. When Glenn came out of the emergency room, the doors swung back like a shot in the morning air. His face was rigid, his legs stiff, his hands clamped together in front of him, twisting and twisting. I looked into that face and knew it had not been a dream. I pulled Reese up against me, ignoring her soft, protesting cry. Glenn climbed in the car and slammed the door so hard Reese woke up with a jerk. She twisted her head like a baby bird, looking from me to Glenn's neck and back again. We sat still, waiting. He said,
"Your mama's gonna be all right."
He paused.
"But she ain't gonna have no more babies."
He put his hands on the steering wheel, leaned forward, pushed his mouth against his fingers. He said,
"My baby's dead. My boy. My boy."
I wrapped my arms around Reese and held on, while in the front seat, Glenn just sobbed and cried. After Mama got home from the hospital, her sisters came around to see us every day. Aunt Ruth had been in the hospital with what Granny called female trouble only a few weeks before, and still wasn't well enough to do much but sit with Mama for an hour or two and hold her hand. But she called every morning. Aunt Alma practically moved in and took over, making Mama stay in bed, doing all the cooking, and fixing beef and bean stew.
"To put some iron back in your blood, honey," she said.
Aunt Raylene showed up in her overalls and low boots to clean the house from one end to the other, going so far as to make Reese and me help her move furniture out in the yard for the sun to warm it up. When she went in to change the sheets on Mama's bed, she lifted Mama easily and carried her out to sit on the couch in the fresh air. Everyone stepped around Glenn like he was another chair or table, occasionally giving him a quick hug or squeeze on the shoulder. He didn't respond, just shifted from the table to the porch when Raylene started sweeping. When Neville and Earl came over, he stood out in the yard with them and drank until his shoulder started to go up and down in fierce, suppressed sobs, and they looked away to spare him being embarrassed. I watched him closely, staying out in the yard as much as I could, squatting down in the bushes where I hoped no one could see me. I put my chin on my knees and hugged myself into a tight, curled ball. Mama's face had been so pale when they brought her home, her eyes enormous and unblinking. She had barely looked at me when I tried to climb up in her lap, just bit her lips and let Aunt Alma pull me away. I cried until Aunt Raylene took me out in her truck and rocked me to sleep with a damp washcloth on my eyes.
"Your mama's gonna need a little time," she told me. "Then she's gonna need you more than she ever has. When a woman loses a baby, she needs to know that her other babies are well and happy. You be happy for her, Bone. You let your mama know you are happy so she can heal her heart."
They did name him Glenn Jr., Reese told me. She had heard Aunt Ruth and Aunt Alma talking. They had buried the baby in the big Boatwright plot Grandma Shirley owned, with the four boys Granny had lost and Ruth's stillborn girls and Alma's first boy. Glenn had wanted a plot of his own, but had no money to buy one, and that seemed to be the thing that finally broke his grief and turned it to rage. His face was swollen with crying and gray with no sleep. He found a house over by the J.C. Penney mill near the railroad tracks and came home to announce we were moving. Aunt Alma was outraged he'd take us so far away, but Mama just nodded and asked Raylene to help her pack. "It'll be all right," she told Reese and me. Glenn put his arms around Mama and glared at Aunt Alma.
"We don't need nobody else," he whispered. "We'll do just fine on our own."
Chapter 5. In the rented house, well away from the rest of the family, Daddy Glenn promised Mama that when they had enough money put by, he was going to adopt Reese and me. We were a family, and he was our daddy now, he kept saying. Mama held onto his hands and nodded wordlessly.
These are my girls, he told her. I'm going to make sure they grow up to be something special, whatever I have to do.
She smiled and kissed him, her open mouth pressing his lips hungrily. Reese put her fat little hands on his arm and said, Daddy, and the two of them lifted her up between them. Daddy, I tried to say, but it sounded funny in my head. I remembered those moments in the hospital parking lot like a bad dream, hazy and shadowed. When Daddy Glenn looked at me, I saw no sign that he ever thought about it at all. Maybe it had not happened. Maybe he really did love us. I wanted him to love us. I wanted to be able to love him. I wanted him to pick me up gently and tell Mama again how much he loved us all. I wanted to be locked with Reese in the safe circle of their arms. I stood still and felt my eyes fill with tears. Mama pulled away from Daddy Glenn and gathered me up. Over her shoulder, I saw Daddy Glenn's icy blue eyes watching us, his mouth a set straight line. He shook himself and looked away. I held on to Mama with fingers as hard and cold as iron. Daddy Glenn didn't like us listening to all those stories Granny and Aunt Alma were always telling over and over again.
I'll tell you who you are, he said. You're mine now. Ain't just boat rights.
He told us about his daddy, Mr. Bodine Waddell, who owned the Sunshine Dairy, and about his brothers. His oldest brother, Darryl, had lost his bid for district attorney, but his law firm was building a reputation as the one to hire if you wanted a city contract. His older brother, James, was about to open up his dental office, and starting next year we'd go to him to get our teeth fixed. Granny says we got good teeth, I told Daddy Glenn. She says the one thing God gave the Boatwrights is hard, sharp teeth.
And you believe everything she says, don't you?
His eyes sank into the wrinkles of his squint, shiny as mica in sunlight, while his mouth twisted so that one side of his grin was drawn up. He looked as if he was about to laugh, but instead he just pursed his lips and spat.
Your granny is the worst kind of liar. That old woman wouldn't tell the truth if she knew it.
He put his hand under my chin, his big, blunt fingers pressing once lightly and then pulling away.
You stay clear of that old woman. I'll tell you what's true. You're mine now. You and Reese, just keep your distance from her.
I didn't trust Daddy Glenn. Didn't believe him when he said all Granny's stories were lies. But I never could be sure which of the things she told me were true, and which she just wished were true. Stories good enough to keep even if they were three-quarters false. All the Boatwrights told stories. It was one of the things we were known for. And what one cousin swore was gospel, another swore just as fiercely was an unqualified lie. Raylene was always telling people that we had a little of the tar brush on us, but the way she grinned when she said it could have meant she was lying to make somebody mad, or maybe she just talked that way because she was crazy angry to start out. What's it mean? I asked Ruth's youngest boy, Butch.
Means we got some colored people somewhere back up the line.
He grinned at me.
Means Raylene's a pisser. She'll say anything, and everybody knows it.
I thought about that a while, and then asked anyway, do we? I watched his smile widen slowly into a smirk. Butch was just 1 year older than me, and I knew I could ask him anything. Not like Garvey or Gray or Aunt Ruth's other boys. They were always trying to pretend they were more grown up than they were, and I could never tell what might start them acting weird. Butch was different, a little soft, not put together too tightly, some people said.
The boy don't act like a Boatwright, was the way Uncle Earl put it. Don't seem to have a temper in him at all, and he's got a right strange sense of humor. Don't know what's serious.
But I loved Butch the best of all my cousins. I could talk to Butch, ask him things, and most of the time he'd purse his lips, squint, and draw me an answer that was sure to be trustworthy.
That is, if he wasn't in one of his teasing funny moods.
Sometimes his answers would sound strange if plausible, and it wasn't till much later that I'd figured the joke in what he'd said. So when Butch said, colored,
oh, yes, we got colored,
I wasn't sure if he was kidding or not. He pushed his white blonde hair back behind his ears and squinted and grinned right into my face.
Boatwright's got everything. All colors, all types, all persuasions.
But the thing is, he sucked his lower lip up between his teeth and looked around to make sure we were alone.
Boatwright women got caustic pussy. Keels off or messes up everything goes in or out their legs, except purebred boatwright babies and rock-hard boatwright men. And even with us, it burns off anything looks the least bit unusual. Polishes babies up so they all pretty much look alike. Like we've been rinsed in bleach as we're born. Except you, of course, all black-headed and strange.
His face became expressionless, serious, intent.
But that's because you got a man-type part of you. Rock-hard and nasty, and immune to harm. But hell, boatwright women come out that way sometimes.
I stared at him, open-mouthed and fascinated. Pretty sure he was shitting me, but taken with it all anyway. His tongue slipped out between his lips, and there might have been the beginning of a grin in his eyes.
Nah, I hissed at Butch. Nah!
People were crazy on the subject of color, I knew. And it was true that one or two of the cousins had kinky hair and took some teasing for it. Enough that everyone was a little tender about it. Except for Granny, people didn't even want to talk about our Cherokee side. Michael Yarborough swore to me that Cherokees were niggers anyway. Said Indians didn't take care who they married like white folks did.
Oh, lots of care they take, Aunt Alma hooted. The Yarborough's been drowning girls and newborns for surely 200 years.
Butch didn't have to tell me about that one. The Yarborough boys were talked about worse than my uncles, and everybody knew they were all crazy. When I started school, one of the Yarborough cousins, a skinny, rat-faced girl from the Methodist district, had called me a nigger after I pushed her away from the chair I'd taken for mine. She'd sworn I was as dark and wild as any child born on the wrong side of the porch, which I took to be another way of calling me a bastard, so I poked her in the eye. It had gotten me in trouble, but persuaded her to stay away from me. I didn't worry too much about what people thought of my temper. A reputation for quick rages wasn't necessarily a disadvantage. It could do you some good. Daddy Glenn's reputation for a hot temper made people very careful how they talked to him. Reese's daddy's people lived back up in the hills above Greenville. Her grandmother had a farm off the Ashley Highway, but we rarely went there to visit. Mrs. Parsons didn't seem to like Mama, though she was always pulling out some present for Reese and never failed to give me a nod of welcome. I was jealous of Reese for having Mrs. Parsons as a grandmother, since Mrs. Parsons looked like one in a way my granny never did. She looked like a granny you'd read about or see in a movie. I loved her thick gray and white braids, pinned together at the back of her neck. Loved the stinky old cow that lived in a shed behind her four-room shotgun house, and the sweet red tomatoes and pulpy green peas she grew over near her creek. Mrs. Parsons wore blue gingham aprons and faded black dresses with long sleeves she would roll back to her elbows. My granny wore sleeveless print dresses that showed the sides of her loose white breasts and hitched up on her hips. She kept her thin gray hair curled tight in a permanent wave, tying it back with string when it went limp in the heat. She wore dark red lipstick that invariably smeared down onto her knobby chin. And she was always spitting snuff and cursing. Mrs. Parsons would talk sadly about her lost boys and her distant daughter while shelling peas into a galvanized bucket. My granny would get so mad she'd start throwing furniture out the screen door. She was always moving out of Aunt Ruth's or Aunt Alma's house to go stay with one of her sisters and threatening to burn down whichever place she had left behind. I loved Granny, but I imagined Mrs. Parsons might be a better choice for a grandmother. And sometimes when we went to visit, I'd pretend she was mine. Every time we went to see Mrs. Parsons, Daddy Glenn would whine that Mama shouldn't be running up there to that hateful old woman.
I don't like that biddy telling stories on you,
he kept saying, imagining that Grandma Parsons damned him and Mama as soon as Mama was out of the sound of her voice. I didn't bother to tell him that she never spoke about them at all.
that she talked about everyday stuff, how the garden was going or the weather or the cow's disposition. The only grown-up she ever mentioned was Reese's daddy, Lyle, and then only to say Reese had his smile, the soft, slow baby grin she told us had made Lyle the best-loved boy in the county. It was Mama who told us Lyle had been the youngest of three boys, and that the two others had died within a year of Grandma Parsons's favorite. She told us to be kind to Mrs. Parsons, who was left with only one daughter she never saw, and a couple of brothers who were waiting to sell off her land when she died.
"Reese should get a share of that land,"
Daddy Glenn told Mama one autumn afternoon when we came back from visiting up in the hills.
"Not that she'll ever need anything from those stuck-up mountain people."
He rubbed at the back of his neck and looked out through the kitchen window as if he were looking into the future.
"Still, it's only right she gets what her daddy would have wanted her to have. You let me deal with them. I'll take care of our girl."
When Grandma Parsons's brother, Matthew, came by with some papers for Mama to sign, Daddy Glenn met him at the door and took the papers in hand.
"We'll just look at these," he said loudly,
and then walked him out to the edge of the property, lowering his voice so we couldn't hear what he said. Mama bit her lips and watched as the stiff-backed Matthew glared at Daddy Glenn and then climbed into his truck. She went out as the truck drove off. "Honey, you didn't say nothing rude to him, did you?" Daddy Glenn turned to her with a sweet little smile. He put his arm around her and kissed her on the temple.
"Don't you worry," he said, and gave her a quick pat on the behind. "I know what I'm doing. You got to be clear with these people. Real clear."
He looked so pleased with himself that he couldn't stop grinning.
"I know their type. I sure do."
Mama frowned, and he gave her a little shake.
"Now don't you go signing none of those papers when I'm not here. I'm telling you, you don't know what they might be stealing from you. Let me handle it."
She nodded nervously, shooing us back in the house for dinner. Grandma Parsons called that night, but Daddy Glenn took the phone and talked to her in a quiet, husky voice that reminded me of the way Uncle Neville would sometimes whisper from behind his cupped hand.
"Uh-huh," he said. "That's right."
Mama watched for a moment and then stepped outside to smoke in the shelter of the side porch. I followed her out and leaned into her hip. Her hand stroked down the back of my head, smoothing out my hair. Her face was lit by the reflection from the street light, her mouth turned down and her eyes sad. I could tell she was worried. "It'll be okay," I whispered up at her, and she smiled back down at me. "Yeah, probably," she said. "And if it won't, it just won't. Sometimes, Bone, you got to do things you wish you didn't have to. And I don't want to hurt that old woman. I really don't. But Glenn needs to take care of this, you understand? He needs to do it, and I've got to let him." She ground out the cigarette under her heel, but didn't go back inside until Daddy Glenn got off the phone.
"Now they understand."
He tapped his forefinger on Reese's nose happily and made her giggle.
"They know how it's gonna be now for sure."
2 weeks later, Grandma Parsons showed up late Sunday afternoon while Daddy Glenn was over at his brother James's new office helping the painting crew put up shelves.
$250,
she told Mama quickly when she got out of Matthew's truck. He'd driven her down to see us, but wouldn't get out himself.
"It's due you since Lyle was in the army for 6 months before they found out he had bad feet. Like I told your husband, they sent it over to me and wouldn't make it out to you unless you filed those papers. But I've brought it down to you in cash. I never should have got it, but Lyle still had me listed as his only family. Just never got around to changing it, I suppose. I told them it should rightly go to you and Reese. I did. But they never paid me no mind."
She looked up once at Mama and then down at Reese, who had run up to grab her around the hips. Her face was tense, and her fingers shook as she raked them through Reese's curls.
"You gonna get a lot of money then, Grandma?"
Reese asked her.
"No, child. And I don't care." "You come on in, Mrs. Parsons."
Mama looked embarrassed, her fingers pulling at the belt loops of her shirtwaist dress.
"Let me get you some iced tea, and you can sit with your grandchild a while."
Mrs. Parsons looked like she was going to cry.
I thought maybe you weren't going to let me see her no more.
Oh, God! Mama took Mrs. Parsons by the shoulders and pulled her into a quick embrace. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't let nobody else do that either.